Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hey, welcome to a Monday edition of Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. So glad to have you tuned in today. And a special welcome to those listening in Faith 1290 in Hartford, our newest Faith Radio family station. We also want to say welcome if you've just discovered us on 104.7 FM in Madison, our new FM translator, and given us a great signal in the Madison area. So good to have you along wherever you might be listening in, all around the Upper Midwest or in Hartford. We do want to just tell you that today we're going to talk about parental influence, and you may feel like you don't have any anymore, but we'll find out that's not the case. But there's an influential decision that just came across from the Supreme Court today, and a dramatic ruling. The Supreme Court threw out a Texas abortion access law in what they're calling a victory to supporters of abortion rights, who argued that it would have shuttered all but a handful of clinics in the state. The 5-3 ruling, the most significant decision from the Supreme Court on abortion in the 2 decades, could serve to deter other states from passing so-called clinic shutdown laws. So we'll kind of keep an eye on that story as we go along and expect some conversation on tomorrow morning on Dr. Bill Meyer Live's show as well. We want to get to today's conversation. So I'm looking forward to hearing from Dan Dupuy, who's chairman of the board of the Coalition for Christian Outreach. It's a Pittsburgh-based campus ministry working annually with over 32,000 students on over 115 campuses, and they're in the middle of summer training things going on right now, bringing together biblical truth, sociological research, college transition findings, and focus group work with parents of adolescents to develop principles that are fresh, clarifying additions to a growing body of research on teen faith development. And we are honored to have Dan with us today. He's written a brand new book called It's Not Too Late, The Essential Part You Play in Shaping Your Teen's Faith. Dan, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thank you, Neil. Great to be with you.
This is a question that I think every parent probably wrestles with or wonders about. I'm curious to know if maybe parents have always felt that their influence was fading when their children become adolescents, or is this a new thing, do you think?
Well, I think it's happened since we sort of invented adolescence. Hmm. I mean, kids used to go from being a child to being an adult, you know, with some rite of passage around age 13. And particularly post-World War II, the idea of having a culture that teenagers define sort of for themselves with their own music and their own stuff they buy and their own ways of their own language, their own ways of doing things. Historically, that's a pretty recent phenomenon. And I think what's dialed it up recently, Neil, has been the emergence of social media, which makes parents oftentimes feel like outsiders to the conversations their kids are having with their peers and with other, you know, with other sources of influence.
You know, when it comes to faith, our children still need us, and even if they think they don't. But what happens if we, as parents, maybe believe the mistaken idea that our influence is limited or gone?
Well, that becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. When we think that our influence is gone, we no longer engage with our kids in the same way. And so conversations that we could have with them, we opt not to have with them because our assumption is they're not interested in hearing what we have to say, and they're not interested in us listening to them. So we begin to pull punches. And interestingly, the research suggests the first place we stop having conversations with our kids is talking about God. So I'd say the only time you don't have influence is if you don't think you do, because then you behave exactly as if you don't.
Hmm. Well, in fact, you've put together in the opening pages of the book, It's Not Too Late, suggesting there are maybe 7 myths of which we can easily get caught up in. Why don't you just review those briefly?
Yeah, the myths grow out of what we've just talked about, sort of the way we view teenagehood. And the first myth is that parents are peripheral in the lives of emerging adults. This myth is best summarized by a pretty amusing book title, a book that came out about 15 years ago called Get Out of My Life. But First, Could You Take Me and Cheryl to the Mall? You know, which is sort of, you know, that the experience of raising teenagers is one, the relationship's different, it changes, and we get signals from kids that suggest to us maybe they're not as interested in being with us and talking to us. So the peripheral parent, and related to that is the second myth that Christian professionals have the primary responsibility for the spiritual nurture of our kids. And I can remember being in a focus group with parents, one of whom was anticipating her daughter turning 13. And she was really grateful for a youth worker at her church because her assumption was her time of being able to nurture the faith of her daughter was over. So she saw a baton handoff where the professional was going to do the heavy lifting because she wouldn't be able to anymore. And that's pretty common. So the third myth is that college is a time for emerging adults to sow their wild oats. In this one, I would not have noticed, but a Nigerian college student who's part of a CCO group on campus, he asked me the question, Dan, why do American college students feel compelled to behave recklessly? And I started probing into this, and it's almost as if college students feel they're being cheated out of the experience if they don't do crazy, dangerous things, which includes, of course, consuming a lot of alcohol, perhaps engaging in sexual practices that are risky and damaging. So that's a pretty persistent myth that young people and their parents, interestingly enough, hold on to that myth as well, sort of the assumption, my kid's been raised in the church, but, you know, they might go a little crazy in college, and that's just the way it is. And the fourth one related to that is it's unrealistic to expect college students to attend church regularly. And, you know, again, it's sort of looking at college as a time away from the faith, sort of like a vacation. And pretty quickly we find out kids who go to college, you know, they come home and they're used to being up till 2 in the morning. And so we think, well, goodness, no wonder, how could they ever, you know, get up Sunday morning and go to church? But of course, thousands of them do every week, and the connection to the local church is really important for college students. And then the fifth myth, Christian faith has no place in an intellectually rigorous environment such as college. Years ago, Mark Knoll wrote a book called The Scandal of the Evangelical Mind. It was the book of the year at one point in the 1990s. And Knoll's point was that Christians have not fully engaged in intellectual pursuit. We seem to sometimes lack the confidence that we should have for people who serve the Lord who created the whole cosmos from nothing. And so, you know, sometimes we signal to our kids that our faith is somehow not going to hold up when they get into that marketplace of ideas where people believe all kinds of different stuff. And then the sixth myth is that saying it is enough. And the essence of this myth is that what we do will always speak infinitely louder than what we say. Our kids need to leave our home with our example front and center in their thinking. And then the final myth is the I've got a good kid myth. And this is a tough one because there are kids who really are admirable. You know, they may be Eagle Scouts. They may volunteer time. Just great kids. But there's no faith there. There's no connection to Jesus Christ. Superficially, they look great, but we're sending them to college. And we know, and perhaps they know, that they're not connected to the Lord in any way. And those kids get a lot of strokes and affirmation for that. But at the end of the day, of course, what matters is being connected to the Lord of the universe. So those are the seven myths.
And they are, you know, they're sobering as you list them. We're going to take a quick break and come back and talk about some solutions. Those are some of the myths. And maybe as you heard that list, you thought, yeah, I found myself in that situation or circumstance, or I've had that thought. We'd love to encourage you today. Dan Dupuy has a wonderful book called It's Not Too Late, The Essential Part You Play in Shaping Your Teen's Faith. We do have some copies to give away, and so we'll do that via drawing. And you can sign up today by giving us a call at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. And you can just give us your contact information. We'll put you in the drawing for a copy of Dan's book. And you can also join us in the conversation. If you have some questions about a teen in your home, someone that you love and care about. Dan is the chairman of the board for the Coalition for Christian Outreach. It's a campus ministry working with thousands of students on over 100 campuses. And Dan and his wife are the parents of four children. I forgot to mention that earlier. That qualifies him for something, I think. And so we'll ask him about passing the faith on to his kids, and we'll get that perspective and more coming up in a minute here on Connecting Faith, 877-93-FAITH. Parents, we take a lot of responsibility on, and it is a big responsibility to be a parent. And as our children grow and develop, and we begin to think, well, perhaps we've lost our place of influence in their lives, and as particularly as it relates to faith, that's our conversation today. It's Not Too Late, The Essential Part You Play in Shaping Your Teen's Faith. That's the title of a new book from Dan Dupuy. It is from Baker Books, and a great read. Dan is the chairman of the board, the Coalition for Christian Outreach. It's a campus ministry working annually with over 32,000 students on over 115 campuses. And he and his wife, Carol, are the parents of four children. I forgot to ask you, Dan, the ages of your children, so I'm wondering, have you gone through some of these things that you've written about personally?
Yes, we're in the... Where maybe the book is just an instruction manual for me, you know, to our sons are 24, they're twins, and one lives here in Pittsburgh and was married in February, and his brother lives in Minneapolis and is going to be married July 9th in just less than 2 weeks, and they have younger sisters who are also twins. We have two sets of twins. And Annie and Eliza are both 20, and they're spending the summer. They're both going to be juniors in college, and they're spending the summer working at a camp.
So you've kind of worked through some of these things, obviously, overseeing the Coalition for Christian Outreach as well. But you know, I'm wondering, maybe we just probably have to go back to the basics a bit and talk about, well, what is the goal, you know, as parents? How do we know when we reach it, at least as it relates to passing the faith along?
Well, you know, the goal, it's interesting because this wasn't initially as I took this project on, you know, I didn't have in mind that I would necessarily try and define what success looked like. But I was challenged by some folks that, look, if you're going to do this, you need to identify what it is we're shooting for. So as I thought about it, I thought, you know, this is important because I think we form ideas with our kids of what constitutes success, and if we're not doing it in a conscious, God-honoring way, we may have some definitions of success that don't really fit what it means to be a Christian. So the goal is, as I define it in the book, the first thing is when we have kids that emerge into young adulthood, age 23, 24, 25, we'd really like to see them own the faith that they grew up in. So that would be, you know, the first characteristic, and that is kids who own their faith. And then we would also like it to be a faith that's consequential, meaning that it shows up in places. It shows up in decisions about who they spend time with, where they live, who they marry. And then finally, a shared faith, one that gets lived out in community and is shared with the world. You know, we're called to bring the gospel to the ends of the earth, starting in our own neighborhoods. So the definition that you'd find in the book reads this way: the young adult Christian owns his or her faith in Jesus Christ, reflects it in priorities and decisions, and lives it in community with other believers seeking to influence the watching world.
Dan, I know that as you've been involved in campus-based ministries for a number of years, you've seen changes take place. It was not that long ago that Christian Smith did some landmark research on Christian faith in young adults. I'm just interested in maybe some of his research and what you've seen on maybe the shape of faith in today's college student.
Well, it's a great question, Neil, because I think what we were seeing on campus, and we've seen it for years and years and years, was kids who grow up in the church who leave the church during the college years. And Barna did a piece of research around 2006, and 60% of students who grow up in the church leave it during college. Christian Smith's research is unprecedented. It's the largest, most comprehensive research project on the attitudes and practices of young people with regard to faith that's ever been done in our country. It's done over a 10-year period of time. And Smith, at the conclusion of this project, looked at young people who'd made a good transition, who sort of fit that definition that we just read, and looked back at those 23, 24, 25-year-olds at the age of 18 to see what he could learn about that group of people and what patterns might emerge that might reveal something that they had in common. And there were six things that Christian Smith discovered as a consequence of doing the research. And at the top of the list is the influence and example of what Smith calls highly religious parents, parents who live into the faith that they're espousing to their own kids. That was the first one on the list. And that, for me and my research, was the beginning place for this book.
So that we do have an important role to play as parents, but I think all of us recognize that we have imperfections and maybe even hypocrisy. Does that hold us back or really inhibit us in doing more than what we actually end up doing when it comes to passing the faith along?
Well, I think the parents, we as a group, tend to be acutely aware of our own shortcomings. You know, I haven't made a parenting mistake today that I'm aware of, but I'm pretty sure I made a few of them yesterday. And I don't even have kids at home right now. I think we know that the challenge of doing this in a God-honoring way is beyond us. What's interesting is to consider our brokenness and imperfection as a tool in God's hand. That first of all, the scripture's full of characters who are parents in the lineage of Jesus, who are so far from being perfect. I mean, the Old Testament reads like a litany of sort of dysfunctional families, and yet God uses those families to do redemptive work, in the midst of us. But our imperfections as Christians, as Scripture talks about us being cracked vessels that God can shine his light through. Our imperfections can actually be assets in God's hands when we are with our kids. And let me just give you a quick example. And if my son is listening, he let's see if he remembers this. When our boys were nine playing Little League baseball, they took called third strikes back-to-back in a baseball game. And I wasn't managing. I was just a parent watching. But I felt compelled to share my parental wisdom with them between innings. And I must have done it with a pretty good degree of intensity because they both started crying. So I was that guy, you know, the over-the-top little league parent who made his both of his kids cry. That is, I mean, that's parental imperfection, you know, writ large. There it is. My own stuff coming out in a way that was harmful to my kids. And what do you do in a moment like that? Well, this is where the gospel is so beautiful, because in our family, my wife insisted that when we offended each other, there was a particular way that we handled that. And in my case, I had to name the thing that I'd done to the boys. I'm sorry that I have taken something that's supposed to be fun and I have made it something else. I needed to ask for forgiveness. Will you forgive me? And then their job wasn't just to say, well, that's okay, which is how it often happens. Their job was to say to me, Dad, I forgive you. And that is that's demonstrating for our kids what the gospel looks like. Because ultimately, it's Jesus saying those words to us, I forgive you, that make us into new people. So that's the imperfections are tough. Screwing up it's so discouraging sometimes to really mess up as a parent. But coming clean is the best guard against hypocrisy. You know, admitting when we've done something or said something that's really wounded another family member or someone else. That's an opportunity for the gospel to really shine.
We're talking about the essential part that we as parents play in shaping our teens' faith. And if you have, you know, children that are in adolescence, getting older, and, you know, you're maybe wondering about, are they going to really own their faith? We're talking about today in a great new resource called It's Not Too Late, the title of a new book from Dan Dupuy. We've got some copies of the book to give away and would enjoy making sure that you get a copy. If you sign up for it, we'll do a drawing at the end of the show for two or three copies of that at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH, and you can sign up for a copy of Dan's new book, It's Not Too Late. Dan is chairman of the board of the Coalition for Christian Outreach. It's a campus ministry working over 32,000 students on 115 campuses. Dan, we just have a minute before the break. Just curious to know if, how has campus ministry changed? Is there kind of one primary way that you're doing it now that was being done maybe 5, 10, 20 years ago?
Yeah, I think the primary change in campus ministry is the number of kids who have no point of reference for the faith, for church. So we have more young men and women on our campuses who, you know, were raised in an utterly secular context, which in some ways is eye-opening, can be discouraging, but to us is very encouraging, because there's still an openness to the gospel that you would find encouraging if you were on campus with us. That's the biggest difference.
All right. When we come back, we're going to talk some practical ways that we can interact with our kids, that we can not get caught up in some of those myths that we addressed earlier. Talking more with Dan Dupuy, chairman of the board of the Coalition for Christian Outreach. You can join us with a call. Sign up for a copy of the book at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. As a parent, you know, our heart is that our children would embrace the faith and that they would live it out and that their lives would reflect and represent Christ well. During the turbulent adolescent years, as they transition into adulthood, it's sometimes when we feel like we've lost our influence and our opportunity to really help our kids own their faith. And we know the statistics are sobering that when our kids leave home, they often wander away, and that doesn't necessarily mean that they're going to wander back. We're talking about it today with Dan Dupuy. Dan is chairman of the board of the Christian the Coalition for Christian Outreach. It's a CCO, Coalition for Christian Outreach. It's a campus ministry and working with thousands of students on over 100 campuses around the country. You can find out more, by the way, ccojubilee.org. That's their website, ccojubilee.org. And you can also find a link to the book as well. It's Not Too Late, The Essential Part You Play in Shaping Your Teen's Faith. Dan, I want to get practical today and talk about, I know one of the areas you address is that sometimes we as parents get caught up in our, I guess you call it, circle of concern instead of our circle of influence. Say a little bit more about that.
Yeah, the circle of influence is the stuff that we actually have some degree of control over. So the things that happen under the roofs of our house, usually we have a great deal to say about, you know, how we treat each other, what's okay, what's not okay, when are we going to eat dinner? Yeah, those are circle of influence things. The circle of concern, we may be upset that Britain has left the European Union, but if we're spending all of our time on that one, thinking about it, worried about it, obsessed with it, we then take time and energy away from attending to the stuff that we actually have a little bit closer to home. So with kids, I think with kids, we can easily become obsessed with the toxic culture that we live in, and it is not an easy place or time in which to raise children who are going to be Christ followers. But if we become so obsessed with, the latest Disney star who's fallen from grace, or, other harmful things that are in the culture, we certainly need to pay attention to them. And if we feel compelled to write letters or take action of some kind, that's great. But the thing that we have influence with is our own child who's right in front of us. And that's where we want to direct our energy.
You know, just because our kids are still at home doesn't mean that they're, it's quote-unquote, home. As unavailable. They got their earbuds in all the time. How do we maybe make time? Do you have some recommendations on how we can actually make sure that our influence is strategic?
Yeah, I heard an interview about a month ago with a man who had been in prison for 20 years, and he had been released and gone home. His family was still intact, and his wider family was all together, I think, to celebrate his freedom. And what he noticed was the lack of noise. For a room full of people, normally you could almost not have heard yourself think. But in this case, it was almost eerily quiet. And he looked around the room to see, gosh, 20 years ago, this would have been different. Well, everybody was on, their phone. They were texting. They were doing. To think of a room full of people, 20, 30 people in a relatively small space and quiet because people are not engaged with each other. This is worth having repeated conversations with in the home. Because what we're seeing on college campuses is kids that don't know how to engage face-to-face with other human beings. And that's a huge problem for emerging adults because it leads to isolation and all kinds of related problems. So I think the kind of interaction, the culture that we have in our home is something that we want to start attending to when our kids are really little, and we never want to stop attending to, even if it means having to have some hard conversations about, for example, the use of cell phones in the home. Should there be a bucket at the front door? Perhaps. Certainly, there's no room for anybody texting during dinner. Dinner's got to be pretty much sacred. That's time when we're together, where we have conversations with each other. That's one of the practical things.
Well, in fact, you talk about dinner. We think that seems like such a simple thing, but what studies have shown that if we can do it together as a family a few nights a week, it does make an incredible difference, doesn't it?
Well, it does, and the data is easily accessible. You can just Google family dinner, and you start to see it. All the positive things that accrue to families that do it, and all the negative things when we're moving so fast that we never have that point of connection with our family members. There's a lot of downside to that. And the opportunity to be around the table, to reconnect with each other, it's a big deal. And it leads to, you know, I'm always conscious of coming back around to things that are very practical. One of the things that I think ought to be happening around our dinner table is cultivating a sense of gratitude. It's one of the most important things as Christians that we can give to our kids. Gratitude is a discipline. It's something that we feel sometimes and sometimes we don't. But as Christians, it's something we always ought to have because of what God's done for us. So working the gratitude muscle at the dinner table gets prompted by a very simple question. You know, what was your good thing for the day? What was your good thing for the day? What was one thing that happened today that was part of your experience that you're thankful for? In that regular rehearsal of doing that, now with younger kids, they'll jump in right away. If you're listening to this and you've got a teenager and you think, you know, I'd like to start doing that, you know, probably for the first 2 weeks, they're going to look at you like you've got a third eye in the middle of your forehead. You just need to stay with it. Because cultivating together a sense of being thankful and being grateful will change the culture of a home as quickly as anything I can think of.
You know, as you were reviewing the myths in the last half hour, we talked about some seven myths, and one of them was that, you know, saying it is enough. It's the myth that we say, well, if we just say it instead of living it out. But also, I think you're referencing the Christian Smith study that suggested that when it comes to faith issues, that's one of the first things that goes away, that we don't even say it anymore. We don't. The one thing we don't talk about is faith issues, right?
Yeah, exactly. And I think what what Smith is noting is the need to continue to talk about other things because you have to. I mean, you have to talk about school and money and girlfriends and other things. The faith conversation can be uncomfortable. Kids can hit us with some doubts and questions that make us uncomfortable, you know, even early in adolescence. And so we backpedal. It becomes the first ground that we surrender. And of course, as you think about it, it's the last ground we ought to surrender, and it leaves our kids in sort of a perilous place of having to figure out this stuff on their own or from other influences like their peers.
You know, parents still have influence. That's the point of your book, It's Not Too Late, the essential part you play in shaping your teen's faith. It's Dan DePee, my guest today. But there are other influences that are growing for our teens. So do we try and minimize those or counteract those, or how do we respond to those outside influences?
Well, I think the general principle for teens is we always want to remember that in a few short years, they're going to have to discern for themselves how they're going to handle the other influences in their lives. So on one hand, you know, we do want to keep them away from things we think are really harmful. I mean, there are moments where we jump in with both feet because they're hanging out with people who are dangerous, or they're engaging some part of the internet that is dangerous. But most of the time, what we want to be doing is helping them rehearse their own choices. So if we have the influences of, for example, TV watching, you know, should a teenager, should any of us for that matter, be watching something like Game of Thrones? Well, that is an opportunity to have a conversation about discerning what we take in. You know, is really good storytelling worth all the other junk that comes with it? Because those are decisions they're going to have to make for themselves when they're out of our home and well beyond our, you know, our reach.
Dan, when a couple of the myths you talked about is that we assume that, well, when our teens go off to college, there's going to be this time of kind of wandering away. They sow their wild oats. they're not going to have time to attend church, and that Christian faith can't stand up to the rigors of, you know, higher ed. Are these things that students actually believe, or is it something that we've just sort of allowed them to assume?
Yeah, it might be a chicken and egg question. I do think that what we project as parents, because our example is so powerful in the context of our homes, that if we project, for example, the idea that, you know, the Christian faith is not something that belongs in a place like college, it's not going to hold up. It's separate from a place where people really think. If we project that in some ways to our kids, yes, I think they do pick that up. Or I do think they will pick up ideas about sort of reckless living during college. If our idea still is more informed by Animal House than it is by Scripture, you know, I think we pass that on to our kids.
Dan Dupuy is my guest today, Chairman of the Board for the Coalition for Christian Outreach. It's a Pittsburgh-based campus ministry working with thousands of students over 115 campuses. And he has authored a great new book called It's Not Too Late, The Essential Part You Play in Shaping Your Teen's Faith. This would be a great resource for you or maybe someone that you know and care about, maybe a son or daughter with some grandchildren that are wondering about this, full of great stories and practical insights, and we'll get some more from Dan in a moment. We do have some copies of the book to give away, so you can sign up for a drawing at 877-933-2484. That's 877-93-FAITH. Or if you want to join us with a question or a comment, maybe a bit of your story, I always love to have you interact with us. Again, the phone number, 877-933-2484. Or if you want to send us a note, use the email on the show page. Go to myfaithradio.com, click on the Connecting Faith show page, and there's an email link right there. You can send us your question or comment, and we'll talk more with Dan Dupuy in just a moment. We want our children to follow in our footsteps as we seek to follow the Lord, and for them to own their own faith. Lots of research has gone into the fact that many young adults, when they leave home, off to college often, is sort of a turning point where they wander away, don't necessarily come back. So in these times of transition, how do we encourage our children to own their own faith? And we sometimes believe that we've missed that opportunity once our children are gone. It's Not Too Late is the reminder from the book by Dan Dupuy. That's the title. It's Not Too Late, The Essential Part You Play in Shaping Your Teen's Faith. I'm wondering, Dan, I guess if there are times, though, when we sort of act like helicopter parents and maybe we shelter our children, does that backfire sometimes?
It can. I did a series of focus groups as I prepared for the book, and what I noticed was that parents who exerted a high degree of control had a completely different experience from parents who let the rope out. And we've seen that on campus as well. So kids who grow up with parents who are helicopter parents, who are, and again, the key word here, Neil, is control. I make a distinction in the book between control and influence. Influence is what we have abundantly, and that's what I'm encouraging parents to step into. Look, you can. Your kid is looking to you for conversation. They're looking to you for wisdom. But control is something that diminishes as our kids grow older. So kids with a lot of restrictions, when they go away to college, yeah, Katie, bar the door. Sometimes it really goes badly, as opposed to giving a child a little bit more freedom, again, letting the rope out while they're still under your own roof.
You know, there was a phrase surfaced several years ago suggested that it takes a village to raise a child. Talk about maybe how important other adults are in our teens' lives, and if you recommend that we engage them to help our children in their faith development.
Yeah, this was the big surprise for me. I imagine it was for the researchers who uncovered this particular piece. I mentioned there's a sort of a cluster of six things that were true for kids who made successful transitions as young adults with a faith that they owned. On that list of six things is this: the teen has many adults in a congregation to turn to for help and support. What that suggests is that the people who surround us in our places of worship and in our churches, they are the people connected to our kids, who are friends, Christian families, who we know and spend time with. Those adults are really important to our children. They exert their own influence in a way sometimes that is not available to us as parents. And what's interesting about this is that peer influence is nowhere on that list of six things that are so important. And of course, if you want to find out what those six things are, you know, get the book. But the peer influence is not on there. Mission trips, that's not on there. What is on there is other caring adults who will have a role, a place of influence, of godly influence in the life of our kids.
Encouraging to know that we don't have to do this alone, and that's particularly important, I'm sure, for single parents too, or maybe even blended families.
Absolutely. I think the burden of feeling that as a single parent, I'm not a single parent, but as I researched, the burden of feeling that this is really your game, that you have to do this, is way more than a person can handle. But having a community of other people that are concerned about your son or your daughter the way that you are is a big deal. And so I think what's important then is to do a little bit of an inventory, you know, to think, is my family connected to other families? Is my family connected to other who do my kids know among adults who might be a great influence on them? I mean, my kids have been blessed with such strong influences from friends of our family that, you know, it's almost beyond reckoning how much that has meant to us.
You know, even in the best homes and family situations, our kids make mistakes or bad choices. You know, the frontal cortex not developed. So how do we respond? I mean, what encouragement do you have for the brokenhearted parent whose child has strayed away?
Yeah, and it's so tough to go through the things that parents go through when they have a son or daughter who is perhaps a prodigal, who has made a bad decision or a series of bad decisions, because the pain just seems sometimes that it is unending and that there's no hope. And I think the wisest thing I've ever heard is a woman who taught school in Egypt at a Christian school for many years said, you know, the story's not written yet. And so the not giving up, leaning into God's faithfulness, and understanding the heart of the Lord towards the prodigal. I found reading, you know, it takes about 4 minutes to read the parable of the prodigal son, and it just never gets old. And I think it's interesting that Jesus chose, when he wanted to explain what redemption really looked like, he chose the story of a father and an estranged son, a son who'd made horrible, shameful choices, seemingly beyond the kind of choices that would allow him to come back into the community, and yet he's welcomed back by the father. So having the heart of the father of the prodigal toward our kids is really important. Sometimes we're going to have to establish some tough boundaries with them to experience some of the consequences of what they've done. Sometimes they simply need our support. Rarely do they need us to rub their noses in what they've done. They're pretty acutely aware of it. But the key, if it, you know, the title of the book is It's Not Too Late. Boy, when you have a child who's wandered off the reservation, there's a great story. Another man who did extensive research, a man named Vern Bengston, who did a 38-year research project on 350 families and how faith gets handed from one generation to the next. And Vern Bengston was the only one of his 33 first cousins who was not a believer. He'd walked away from the faith. And his mother went to her grave just wishing more than anything that he would come back. Vern Bengston, he was 67 years old. This happened a few years ago. It's Easter morning, Santa Barbara, California. He hears a church organ and is sort of drawn around the corner from where he lived to this church. And he walked into the church, and the choir is going, and the organ's going, and lights coming in the church. And he said it hit him like a ton of bricks. The prodigal came back. And see, goodness, I don't want to wait till 67 if I have a prodigal. But it just reaffirms the idea that you don't want to give up.
Well, as the book is titled, It's Not Too Late, which is something to hold on to in terms of hope. But I would assume, too, that, you know, it's, early is okay, too, right? It's not too early to start really living out and sharing faith with our kids.
Exactly. I mean, I think the earlier we start, the better off we'll be in setting a culture. Particularly with little kids, we want to shape the habits of our own hearts, too. We want to make ourselves available as often and as much as we can. Time is the thing here. We don't, you know, I had a story of a kid who identified a moment in the life he had with his dad. When his dad asked him, "What did I do that helped you?" This young man referred to something he called the talk. And the father, you know, I asked the father when he's telling me the story, "Well, gosh, tell me what was in the talk. That sounds like it was great." And the father looked at me and said, "Dan, I have no idea what was in the talk." He didn't even remember. The point of the story to me was you really don't get to choose your moment of influence. So from the time our kids are small, if we simply learn to say yes to them whenever they ask us to do anything, just continue to say yes before we even think about it, and invest tons and tons and tons of time in building that relationship with our kids, it's never too early. And that's the opportunity that we have to shape our own patterns, our own habits, so that we are bonded to the young people that God gives us.
What a privilege we have. And the good news, it's not too late. The essential part you play in shaping your teen's faith. That's the title of a new book from Dan DePee. You can find out, find a link to the book. We'll post it on our website, but you can go to Dan's website. Dan is chairman of the board of the Coalition for Christian Outreach. And if you go to ccojubilee.org, ccojubilee.org, you can find out more about their great ministry. And also get links to the book and more research and information. Dan, blessings to you. Thank you for the good work you're doing there with the Coalition, and pray that it is a powerful, fruitful year ahead.
Well, thank you, Neil. And I appreciate those prayers. The opportunity of working with college students is tremendous. And thanks so much for having me as a guest. And blessings to you, too, as you continue to really come alongside people and help them.
Dan, what's the biggest maybe prayer request you have as you head into the fall season with these all these campuses?
Yeah, I think the openness of college students to the gospel is always front and center for me.
We'll remember to pray for a great response that God's Spirit is free to move. Thanks to Dan DePee for joining us today, talking about the book, It's Not Too Late. If you missed part of the show, you can catch that again. We post the podcast interviews on our show page, Connecting Faith Show page at myfaithradio.com.